أهلاً بكل الذين ينضموا للاستماع إلى راديو بلدي، أول راديو عربي أمريكي ويعنى بقضايا العرب في المهجر. برامجنا في راديو بلدي كل يوم جمعة من 8 وحتى 9 صباحاً مع ليلى الحسيني في بث حي ومباشر عبر WNZK Radio 690 AM. صباح الخير بلدي، صباح الخير لكل مستمعينا.
Welcome to Radio Baladi, the first Arab, Middle Eastern and American simulcast radio show. Radio Baladi is broadcast every Friday morning on WNZK 690 AM from 8 until 9 Eastern Time on Good Morning Michigan with Layla Al-Husseini. Our call-in number, 248-557-3300. And now, stay tuned for the best radio talk show on Arab and American issues with your host, Layla Al-Husseini.
Good morning, thank you for being with us. This is the local connection from US Arab Radio. My name is Khalil Hashim, editor via Michigan.com, a digital business magazine in the Middle Eastern communities in Michigan. This show is brought to you in cooperation between US Arab Radio and YahMichigan.com. The number here is 248-557-3300. Give us a call should you have a question or a comment. Again, the number here is 248-557-3300. Whether you have a question or a comment in Arabic or in English, we want to thank you for being with us. And happy Ramadan to all. We wish you a safe and productive fasting experience during this month of fast. Fasting is challenging. It's not easy. I do it every year. And fasting affects the body in many different ways. And there are plenty of medical information to show that, or claims rather, that fasting has offers a great benefits to the body, such as anti-inflammatory and gut healing benefits. And from scientific purposes, we're talking about what they call intermittent fasting, people who fast a couple days, 3 days, 4 days. So in this case, for Muslims, they fast an entire month. And still, there are some doctors who claim and some research who claim that fasting does offer benefits. And it helps on the spiritual aspect, there are quite a bit of benefits in which in it really helps us to be a stronger person if we benefit and if we do it correctly, you know. Now, at the same time, the question here is that fertility, how does it affect us when it comes to fertility? How does it affect us when it comes if we're having a fertility, if we're going through a fertility treatment? And to answer these questions, we are fortunate and honored today to have with us Dr. Nicholas Shama. And Dr. Shama is a renowned fertility specialist. He's a founding member of the IVF Michigan Fertility Center and one of the leading infertility specialists in Michigan, Ohio, and the Middle East. He's a Lebanese-American physician. Dr. Shama has performed more than 8,000 IVF cases worldwide and has more than 150 publications in the field of gynecology and infertility. Dr. Shama, good morning and thank you for being with us.
Good morning to you, Khalil, and good morning to you. I'm not sure if Layla is with you or not, but good morning to her too and to all your listeners, and happy Ramadan and Ramadan Kareem in Arabic. So
wonderful thing.
You're welcome.
No, Layla is not with us this morning. It's you and me and our listeners. And again, I'm really honored that you joined us.
No, I'm privileged.
Thank you.
There is no question that infertility is associated with it's a problem in the United States associated with a lot of issues that have to do with nutrition. So that's where actually the fasting of Ramadan, which is a beautiful thing that is practiced by a lot of people, has a lot of potentially positive effects, and we'll discuss those this morning.
Okay. Now, in general, how does fasting affect the human body?
Yeah, it is very... Let's actually start by, in my opinion, and before answering that question, how does fasting affect the human body? fasting affects the human body in a lot of ways. And the question always comes up is what type of fasting are we talking about and whether fasting is associated with weight loss or not. Because for us to fast and then gorge ourselves after the fast is over is potentially detrimental to our bodies, as opposed to fasting that results in one way or another to some degree of weight loss.
Okay.
So that is, has to be put in context. In general, the fasting associated with Ramadan is, is basically similar to what we call in medicine intermittent fasting, as you rightfully suggested in the beginning of our conversation. And the fasting during Ramadan lasts for around a month, and during which time people do not eat, depending on the month of the year and the season, do not eat or drink, actually, for several hours. We're talking about up to 18 hours sometimes, depending on the season of the year. Now, what is interesting is that most of the studies in the literature that discuss fasting involve fasting that allows drinking water. So it is almost extremely hard to extricate the benefit and or potentially the drawbacks of fasting and lack of drinking at the same time from just fasting all by itself. With that being said, let's assume that drinking is not part of the equation and look at fasting in general, which is what we're talking about, intermittent fasting. And there are a lot of studies in the literature that show that intermittent fasting for a period of anywhere between 2 weeks to 3 weeks significantly improves a lot of things in our bodies, from inflammation to metabolic health to musculoskeletal system to even neurologic acuity and psychological symptoms and also reproduction. So all of those are beneficial, and we can potentially talk about all of those tangentially and concentrate on fertility. But there's no question that fasting, intermittent fasting, is beneficial, especially if it is associated with weight loss. Fasting without weight loss actually doesn't seem to do much of anything. So
you know,
that is something to
often,
in the back
often
of our
mind. If you notice in our community, people eat a lot during Ramadan, and I always tell them that to get the benefit of fasting, you have to eat less. And also, I mean, I'm not an expert on the area, but just what it does to my body. And you have to eat good food, you know, that is good for you. You know, fasting all day and then gorging on sweets and gorging on things that, you know, fatty stuff, it's not, it doesn't do anything. I don't know what you think.
No, I'm totally in agreement with that, because see, when you're fasting, your body becomes accustomed to feeling that you are in a state of starvation. So in a sense, it changes its metabolism to basically make you as if wanting to hoard food when food is available, because you're expecting another degree of starvation come the next period. So when you do that, you actually have more likely to basically conserve that energy that you get when you intermittently eat into fat, and therefore that could becomes a major issue. On the contrary, if you basically eat a little bit less than usual and therefore decrease your calorie intake by somewhere around 20 to 40% during a 24-hour period, then that's where the benefits become absolutely apparent.
Sure.
So that is something you're rightfully so in sharing with whoever it is that is fasting. And most of our listeners probably are fasting this morning. I mean, fasting
absolutely,
is a beautiful thing, I think, on a spiritual level, because it allows people to feel with other people that are less fortunate than ourselves and have less food available to them, and actually makes you feel better and psychologically feel happier because you're actually dealing with the rest of humanity. So, I mean, it's such a beautiful endeavor, in my opinion, that I wish more people do it, and all humanity does it. And I can tell you that most religions on this planet incorporate fasting in one way or another into their paradigm of what people should do or shouldn't do.
Absolutely. You know, let's talk a little bit about the quality of the food that people should eat during Ramadan. I mean, I think this is as important and as the fact that, we're restricting the intake of calories.
So, I mean, that's actually a very important question that you actually raised and a discussion point. Because here's the situation. Carbohydrates, in essence, or a carbohydrate-rich diet, increases what we call insulin resistance in our bodies. And there's tons of studies in the literature and data to show that if one actually incorporates a high carbohydrate diet, your insulin sensitivity diminishes and you're becoming more insulin resistant and therefore more likely to gain weight. And the reverse is absolutely true. So when we fast, it might be very prudent to actually have less carbohydrate-rich diet, and not only that, have diets, if you have to eat carbohydrate to any degree, have carbohydrates that are digested slowly in the body, what we call those that have a glycemic index that is longer, and also to actually have more fiber in our diet and less sugars that are processed sugars in our diet. So all those things related to carbohydrates are very important in considering when we're actually fasting. And it's very interesting that by tradition, people that are fasting will, for instance, tend to eat more dates when they break the fast for the suhoor in the morning. And that's actually one of the foods that has been shown to have a more extended glycemic index and therefore beneficial than eating foods that are like drinking energy drinks or drinking, let's say, sugary drinks that will raise your glycemic index very quickly, and then within a period of an hour or so, it is gone. And that is, in essence, detrimental to the state of fasting that we're trying to achieve.
You know, some people like to break the fast on, like I do. I break my fast on water, and then I eat one or two dates, and then I take a break. You know, I do my prayers, then I come back and eat a little bit of soup, a little bit of salad, and then I eat a little bit of food, not a lot. But I like to, you know, replenish the water loss and the nutrients and the vitamins and try not to eat too much and not to eat too fast. I find that it really benefits my body more. I feel much better. I don't feel tired after I eat. What do you think?
I mean, I agree with you totally because your body, remember, it has had nothing to eat or drink for 16 to 18 hours. And therefore, to that extent, you cannot, I mean, suddenly your stomach is not filled with anything and then you overfill it, then you will feel horrible because all the blood rushes into your digestive tract and therefore your acuity diminishes. Brain acuity diminishes tremendously if you gorge yourself immediately after you break the fast. And what we discussed initially is the lack of water is something, it's very hard to incorporate into the fasting paradigm because we don't really know, there's no question that water deprivation plays a role in all of this. And it is hard to actually find out how much of a role that plays. But think about it, if you actually drink enough water during the non-fasting time, your body will be able to accommodate that in providing enough volume, basically, in your bloodstream and therefore for your organs to function properly during the fasting hours. So absolutely, it is very important to break the fast like you actually suggested, gradually. Drink plenty of water to replenish that need and put less stress on your kidneys, and then try to eat food.
Now, when it comes to water, you know, there are arguments that warm water is better than you than cold water. Does the temperature play any role in here?
You know what? I am not exactly familiar with the difference between cold and hot water or warm water. To my knowledge, it makes no difference because water is water at the end of the day, and our bodies, compared to the amount of water that we drink, we're talking about, it immediately gets diluted and incorporated to our body temperature in our bodies. So that is makes very little difference in terms of metabolism and therefore homeostasis.
Here's what we're going to do, Doctor. We're just going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back and talk about how fertility plays and infertility plays into this. Please stay tuned.
All right.
When it comes to reproductive medicine, IVF Michigan Fertility Centers are the recognized leaders. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and five other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. As a founding member of IVF Michigan Fertility Centers, Dr. Nicholas Shama is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. Dr. Shama has performed over 10,000 IVF cases and has helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. American Board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology and infertility, Dr. Nicholas Shama is a very caring, compassionate, expert physician that understands not only the medical but also the emotional toil of infertility on his patients. When it's time, get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio. Call toll-free 855-952-9600, 855-952-9600.
Welcome back, and thank you for being with us. We're talking to Dr. Shama in regard to fasting and how it affects the body, and you know, the general effect. Is there anything else that I haven't asked you in general, Doctor, about fasting and how it affects the body before we get into the fertility and infertility issue?
No, I mean, it's very important, Khalil, to realize that fasting affects many systems in our body. It's not just reproduction, from musculoskeletal health, from cognitive function, psychological function, liver functions, kidney functions. All of those are affected, and especially metabolic and cardiovascular fitness. So to that end, I think fasting has to be put in context of not just fertility, but in terms of any systems in our body. And therefore, I think we could talk hours on the effects of fasting and nutrition on the rest of our body. The other thing, to put it as a general, look at it in a general sense, is that there is no question, before we talk about reproduction in general, that states of starvation, and we're not talking about fasting now, we're talking about states of starvation whereby you do not eat for perpetual periods of time, not just for 1 month or whatever, those states, because of malnutrition, because of starvation events in nature, have been looked at. And there is no question that states of starvation, perpetual states of starvation, do affect reproduction in general. I'll give you an example. During, let's say, World War II, when there was famine for extended period of time, deliberate famine in Northern Europe, or during areas of famine and starvation in Eastern Africa, there has been documented diminish in fertility in those populations. Because think about it this way, when your body is starving, or when the population as a whole is starving, the pregnancy itself is very demanding on our bodies, and therefore pregnancy does not happen, and our systems, whether it is us humans or animals, will shut down our reproductive potential because they don't want people that can barely have enough food to eat and sustain their well-being for them to have another infant growing that needs food in a state where mom is starving. So actually, reproductive capacity shuts down completely in times of perpetual starvation and famine. But that is
to protect the system, right?
To protect the humans, because you can imagine if a mommy cannot have enough food to sustain herself and actually might die because of starvation, the body has it in it that the neuroendocrine system, that is the brain's capacity to control ovarian function and actually male reproduction, shuts down so that she cannot get pregnant. And because she cannot get pregnant, there is no worry for a developing fetus that cannot basically have enough food for it to sustain itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How does it affect the men?
Well, it's the same degree to women, but to a lesser degree. See, in men, states of perpetual starvation for long periods of time absolutely affects sperm production, because again, the brain shuts down to the same degree that women, but to a lesser degree. So sperm production continues, but maybe at a lesser number. And it never shuts down completely like in women, where they stop ovulating. But in cases of intermittent starvation, just to start our topic this morning, where you fast for a period of 1 month or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or so on, it doesn't seem that in normal men that semen parameters or sperm parameters are affected by the process of intermittent starvation or intermittent fasting. And therefore, for men that have normal parameters of their semen, it does not seem that it affects them in any positive way or negative way to any significant degree. And in men with lower counts, those that have lower counts to start with, there might be some improvement, but no dramatic improvement. And those men that have zero counts to start with, there is no change from starting. Here comes the issue for men. We'll talk about that in detail for women. If intermittent fasting, Khalil, causes weight loss in men, then their semen parameters improve. Let me tell you what I mean.
Okay.
There is no question in the literature that in obese men, men that are heavy, their degree of fertility is substantially less than men that are of normal weight. And the reason for that, because their testosterone levels for those obese men are lower, and their testosterone to estrogen ratios in their bodies are lower, because they produce more estrogens from their fat peripherally. So therefore, if intermittent fasting or any type of fasting or weight loss, dieting, results in weight loss, then their semen parameters will improve and do improve by numerous studies in our literature. So that's what we're talking about. If the period of Ramadan, such a beautiful holy month, is associated with some degree of weight loss in men, and we're talking about maybe 5% or 10%, then there's no question that this improves semen parameters thereafter.
Does it affect the amount of liquid that a person produces?
No, not really. But here comes another part. See, everything is so, it's not yes, no answer. Because remember, during fasting, men, usually during the holy month of Ramadan, men do not engage in sexual activity.
That's true.
So, to that end, you have 18 hours of nothing happening, and then while you're eating, nothing is happening. So basically, sometimes sexual activity does happen during when you break the fast, and therefore, because of that intermittent sexual activity type of situation, semen volume doesn't seem to be altered in any significant degree. Yeah.
Does it affect the libido itself? Does it enhance it?
Very interesting question that you said. Remember what I said, that libido, Khalil, has to do with testosterone level in men.
Sure.
So men that are obese have lower libido than men that are not obese. And therefore, again, if you lose the weight with fasting or intermittent fasting, there is no question that your libido is better, and therefore your libido basically changes during the periods of Ramadan if, let's say, your weight decreases, even a little bit. Now, something very important that I want to underscore, especially for men. Unfortunately, and thank God, I mean, at least in the Muslim community, drinking alcohol is not prevalent, and it's not condoned, to put it mildly. So that is not an issue. But smoking is a major detriment to fertility in men, and a major detriment in libido. I mean, if men knew what smoking does to their libido and their ability to perform sexually, none of them will smoke.
Not argili
is worse than smoking. So
yeah.
What I'm trying to tell you is, it is unfortunate the degree of smoking in our Middle Eastern population.
It is.
And
it is.
Yes. And I think most people that fast are not smoking at the same time. But again, I want to underscore the fact that when they break the fast, they shouldn't, like, become chain smokers either.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not judging anybody, but I avoid certain areas because of the smoking, you know, and it's just too much. I mean, the argili and the epidemic that we have in our society, it's just unbelievable. And everybody is free to do whatever they want. You know, I'm not judging anybody, but it's just, you know, it's amazing.
Well, I can tell you about myself. I haven't, in my entire life on this planet, I haven't touched a cigarette or smoked anything. So to that end, I mean, I sometimes feel that I give my advice to people, and then I guess because, as you suggested, that we live, thank God, in a free country, they can do whatever they want at the end of the day with the proper advice.
Sure.
I'll take it from there.
Yeah. Now, how does smoking, while on the subject, how does the smoking affect the, you know, how we perform and the sexual part of it?
Oh, it's very simple. I mean, actually, I'm gonna give you a sort of a statistic. People that smoke, 60% of them by the age of 60, think about this, and 70% of the men by the age of 70 cannot maintain an erection to even have sexual intercourse. Imagine that.
Sure.
So again, that is a very important piece of information for men to think of. And the way it does it is because smoking affects cardiovascular fitness and affects the blood vessels of the heart, the blood vessels of the legs, the blood vessels everywhere in the body, including the blood vessels of our reproductive organ, in men, the penis. So therefore, because of that, then there is an issue related to sexual performance. So, I mean, that's basically
Absolutely.
How it works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a blood flow thing.
Yes, of course. And to that extent, when blood flow to the testicles are affected, sperm production is affected, and therefore all the parameters dramatically become worse.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Yep.
And I wish more people would pay attention to that. You know,
I mean, I'm telling you,
it is more so in our community than anywhere else.
I'll tell you something, Khalil. If on every argili or every pack of cigarettes, they write on it, the FDA writes on it, that it actually causes impotence in men, men will not touch it.
That's true. That's
Forget
true.
Cancer. Therefore, I guess cancer, it doesn't mean anything to them. But if you put impotence, I am sure they will not touch it.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, what really amazes me is the number of young people today. You know, I mean, when I was growing up, all of this stuff was for grown men, you know, specifically men, for grown men. Today, men, women, youth, young, not even 18, smoking argili like there is no, it's amazing. And that's alarming to me because I look at my children and I say, you know, I hope that they'll never get into that stuff.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, forget smoking, Khalil. There's smoking, and now with teenage kids, there is vaping and nicotine and all those unbelievable effects. I mean, it's just a major concern. You know, it's very interesting that we're talking about fertility in general, because I want to actually put something in perspective. Despite all our discussion this morning, if you look at the world in general, remember that the world population is going to increase somewhere by 20 to 30% in the next 3 decades or so. To that end, it appears that there will be, by the middle of the 21st century, more Muslims in the world than Christians, for instance. And it doesn't therefore appear that, in general, if you look at global fertility issues, even though fertility issues are becoming more substantive as you know, world pollution becomes worse, but it doesn't seem to be affecting the Muslim population in general of the world. And I think the reason for that is because in the Muslim community, even in the United States, that we're having more kids than the Buddhists or the Hindus or the Jews or the Christians, And actually, sure, that has been substantiated, because the number of kids per couple is around 3, whereas in the Christian, let's say, community, is around 2.4 worldwide. So there is no question that the month of fasting doesn't seem to be affecting world fertility in that context. So that is, you know what I'm saying, on a global perspective. Even in,
that's true.
Actually, I'll tell you a statistic in the United States. Currently, for instance, Muslims account for around 1% of the U.S. population, based on demographics done a few years back.
Sure.
But
sure,
let's
sure.
say in another, by 2050, this will go up by 2 to 3 percentage points, surpassing the amount of Hindus, Buddhists, Jews in the United States as an ethnic minority. So,
absolutely.
I mean, clearly fasting is not affecting, or the month of Ramadan is not affecting fertility in general in that global context or even national context.
What we're going to do, Doctor, we're going to take another short break and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Okay.
مركز IVF ميشيغان للخصوبة وأطفال الأنابيب الرواد في مجال الطب التناسلي تعلن عن استقبال مراجعيها في بلومفيلد هيلز ومراكزها المنتشرة في ميشيغان وأوهايو، حيث يتواجد أمهر الأخصائيين لتقديم الاستشارات في جميع مجالات التلقيح الصناعي. يعتبر الدكتور نيكولاس شاما أحد أهم الأخصائيين في الغدد الصماء التناسلية في ولايتي ميشيغان وأوهايو، حيث أجرى أكثر من 10,000 عملية طفل أنبوب وساعد الآلاف من الأزواج على تحقيق حلم الأبوة. يحمل الدكتور شمة شهادة البورد الأمريكي في كل من أمراض النساء والتوليد، أمراض الغدد الصماء التناسلية والعقم، رعاية طبية ممتازة وتفهم عميق للأثر العاطفي والنفسي لحالة العقم. للاستفسار اتصلوا على 248-952-9600.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us. The number here is 248-557-3300. If you have a question in Arabic and English, please give us a call. If you have a comment, give us a call. We're talking about fasting, how it affects the body, and how it affects fertility. And then later on, we're going to be talking about treatment and infertility and how it affects men and women and how it affects everything. And we have our good man, Jerry, on the line. Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Mr. Khalil Hashim. Happy Ramadan to you. And Khalil, if you allow me to speak in Arabic, if you allow me.
Yes, please, and make it quick, though.
Yeah. خليل، رمضان كريم على الإخوة المسلمين في جميع أنحاء العالم. وأحيي الدكتور نيكولاي شاما على خدماته، وأسميك حكيم. صباح الخير حكيم.
صباح النور لإلك ولكل المستمعين.
شكرا حكيم. طبعا دكتور، جميع الأديان تقوم بفريضة الصيام وهذا واجب، ولكن بعض الناس عندما يقومون بالصيام تتغير عندهم نسبة المزاج، أي كما نسميها بالعربي مزاجهم يصبح برتقالي اللون، وبالإنجليزي they become short fuse، ولا يحبون أن يزعجوا من قبل الناس حتى لا يتكلمون الكثير، وحتى بعضهم يؤدون نقص في تأدية واجباتهم اليومية على الشكل المطلوب. إذن حكيم، سؤالي، هل أن الصيام يؤثر على نفسية بعض الأشخاص، أي mentally؟ فأرجو الإجابة، وشكرا لك، وكل عام والجميع بألف خير.
Thank you, Jerry. Thank you, Jerry. And Jerry, he's just, you know, talking about the mental aspect, the effective mental aspect of fasting.
Yeah, I mean, there is no question that fasting affects mentally and actually psychologically the behavior of men and women, to the extent that if, let's say, fasting is associated with, you know, hypoglycemia at the end of the day, and prior to breaking down the fast, people sometimes feel that they have no energy, rightfully so, no energy to do much of anything. I mean, in terms of mental acuity and in terms of the ability to talk, to do things, and to be engaged. And that has to do with basic metabolism if they become hypoglycemic. That is why, for instance, we absolutely do not advocate fasting for diabetics who are on medication, especially because that state of hypoglycemia can ensue, and that could be potentially detrimental, if not life-threatening. So to that end, fasting is associated, no question, with change in psychology and so on. Now, what I do not sometimes understand is why some people that fast become, quote-unquote, like the nice gentleman suggested, short-fused or whatever it is, but because, I mean, the last thing that the beautiful state of fasting should result is in anger issues. You know what I'm saying? So
I think that's an attitude problem because, you know, as you well know, you know, when people fast, they should be humble, they should be extra nice, they should be, you know, generous to people. And generosity is not about money only. Generosity is about, you know, discussion, is about time, is about everything. So I think what Jerry, you know, alluded to is basically these people have more of an attitude problem. And fasting should cure that if they really understood fasting. And as you well know, you know, a lot of people engage in rituals and then they don't really understand it and don't benefit from it. So we hope they benefit from that.
I mean, on a personal level, I'll tell you that when you fast, actually, and if you incorporate that into a feeling of, let's say, meditation and self-perspective analysis and so on, and you look internally, this degree of fasting is such a beautiful period of time.
It should be condoned
and should be practiced by all humans in all times.
It's a rich experience, you know. I mean, when I'm fasting, one of the things is that when I'm driving and people cut me off and things like that, and, you know, another time I may say something, but when I'm fasting, I don't. And I try to make a point not to, and I try to, you know, adopt good habits during the month so they can last me, you know, throughout the year. At least I try to, you know. I'm not a perfect person, so.
I mean, nobody is, Khalil, but if you look at people that practice, like even Buddhists and so on, that practice fasting or people, hermits or whatnot, I mean, practice fasting on a lifelong time frame, those people are more serene and more in tune with humanity's concerns in general than quote-unquote short-fused people that have anger issues.
Exactly. You know, maybe those who get angry, they need to fast even longer.
Yeah, I think so. You should do like not just the ninth month of Ramadan, but they should do more months of the year or every other month.
It is though recommended in most religions that, you know, people do fast more often, even when they're not supposed to or they're not really mandated to.
I think, as we said, intermittent fasting is absolutely beneficial. And we haven't talked even about intermittent fasting for women. I mean, there is no question that a lot of metabolic parameters are associated positively with intermittent fasting. And therefore, for women, forget men, to continue our discussion as far as fertility, especially if it's, again, I underscore that point, if it is associated with weight loss, is beneficial in every form of parameter as far as ovulatory function for women, remembering that ovulatory dysfunction is the most important endocrine disorder for women, especially in the U.S., and especially because of obesity-related issues.
Sure. Should women who are pregnant, should they fast?
No.
Okay.
No, they should not. Because here's the thing. People that are traveling should not fast. Because of the relationship between, let's say, traveling and therefore the chances of them becoming dehydrated on a plane, for instance, and clot-related issues. People who are pregnant should not fast. And the reason for that is because the baby, whether you're fast, mommy is fasting or not, requires constant infusion of nutrients, and therefore that can become compromised, and mom can become ketotic very, very quickly in a pregnant state. So we do not advise fasting during that. And people that are sick with other medic, I just mentioned traveling because that's a non-medic, medical issue, certainly diabetics, people with heart disease, people on medicines, and so on. All of those are, no question about it, should not fast.
And you know, as you well know, you know, Islam is a very easy religion in a way, is that it does incorporate all of these factors. If people feeling uncomfortable, you know, if they have a legitimate reason, or they're sick or fasting, women, you know, pregnant, menstruating, so forth and so on. I mean, even then in the menstruation period, women are not supposed to fast because, you know, they, and I'm not sure what the relationship between the menstrual cycle and fasting, but, you know, when women have their cycle, they're not supposed to fast.
Well, I mean, it's, the relationship is really very clear, and I mean, let me explain that to some people. Because when you lose blood, you're more likely to need to replenish the blood loss by drinking more water and by maintaining your blood volume. So if you're bleeding, and especially if you're bleeding heavy sometimes, then you really shouldn't fast. I mean, it's a very simple mathematical equation. So, rightfully so. People, I mean, women that are having especially heavy menstrual periods, maybe they ought not to fast.
Let's talk about when people are seeking treatment. You know, this is infertility treatment. You know, how, you know, what are the factors here, and where does fasting really play in this during the treatment?
This is actually not an easy to answer question, and the reason for that, Khalil, is because there are no good studies on this in the literature. But, I mean, there are a few studies here and there. There are some from the Middle East. And, I mean, we're talking about small studies that suggest that there is no significant negative effect. But, again, the way I tell my patients is that because you're taking medications, injectable medications, especially during, let's say, IVF treatments or fertility treatments and so on, then you ought not to be able to fast, because hypoglycemia can affect sometimes negatively ovulatory function and ovulatory development, and therefore, to that extent, we advise not to fast during treatment, and especially that treatment almost inevitably, God willing, it results in a pregnancy, so we do not want to compromise the developing embryo when that happens. Now, for men, it is actually an interesting story, because men have to provide a sample at some point during this fertility treatment, correct? Semen sample.
Yeah.
And if they're fasting, they cannot. The way around it is very simple in a situation like this, because we can always tell them before the month of Ramadan or during the period of non-fasting, they can provide the sample, and we can actually freeze it to use it when we have to use it for let's say, whatever fertilization-related time frame we incorporate that into.
I see.
Yeah, so that's...
I mean, or they can wait until after Ramadan.
Yeah, I mean, they can wait, the whole treatment can wait till after Ramadan, but if, let's say, for one reason or another, they have to do it during the holy months of Ramadan, then there are ways around it. I always tell my patients the following, from a religious perspective, is that, you know what, if, let's say, for whatever reason, you cannot fast during the month of Ramadan, you can make it up when you're not pregnant
Absolutely.
The month after. So, I mean, that shows good intentions, I think, to the heavens, and therefore it's only could be appreciated.
Absolutely. what we're going to do is we're going to take a final break, and then we come back. We're going to be talking about what can we do in our early life to ensure healthy fertility for young men and women. Please stay tuned.
When it comes to reproductive medicine, IVF Michigan Fertility Centers are the recognized leaders. With locations in Bloomfield Hills and five other cities in Michigan and Ohio, IVF has experts in all aspects of the field. As a founding member of IVF Michigan Fertility Centers, Dr. Nicholas Shama is one of the leading reproductive endocrinologists in Michigan and Ohio. Dr. Shama has performed over 10,000 IVF cases and has helped thousands of couples fulfill their dreams of parenthood. American Board certified in both obstetrics and gynecology and reproductive endocrinology and infertility, Dr. Nicholas Shama is a very caring, compassionate, expert physician that understands not only the medical but also the emotional toil of infertility on his patients. When it's time, get personalized care from Dr. Nicholas Shama at IVF Michigan Fertility Centers in Michigan and Ohio. Call toll-free 855-952-9600. 855-952-9600.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us. Again, the number here is 248-557-3300. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, whether it's in Arabic or in English. We're available here. We'd be more than happy to answer your question. Again, the number is 248-557-3300. Dr. Shama, we talked about this a little bit earlier, when we're talking about smoking. It seems that when we're young, whatever we do, it's going to affect us down the road. What can we do early in life, pick up some good habits to ensure a healthy fertility for young men and women?
Yeah, since we're talking about Ramadan and fasting and so on, I want to actually emphasize just one point.
Sure.
There is no question that weight management affects fertility in women to some degree more than men, but in both sexes. What I'm trying to say, think about it this way. 2/3 of women currently in the United States are either obese or overweight. 2/3 of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I am not exactly sure the percentage in our Middle Eastern descended population in the U.S., but or in the Muslim population in general, I don't know. But there is no question that obesity and being overweight is a disease now in the United States to a significant degree that affects not just our health, but it affects the economy in the U.S. because of the increased risk of diabetes and increased risk of weight-related complications, you name it, it exists. So the best thing we can do, the best thing we could do as young adults and young men and women, and especially women, is to try to maintain a better weight management story throughout our lives, not just as young people, but as we grow older too. So because that affects in women, there is a direct relationship between weight increase, insulin resistance, and ovulatory dysfunction in women. And if women want to preserve their fertility, they ought to maintain a healthy weight. And if they're overweight or obese, they should try their best to decrease that weight in terms of preserving their fertility. To put that in context, I want to mention a couple of studies. Actually, they were done in animals, but they were actually pivotal studies in our fields done recently that show the following. There was a study done at Harvard by Jonathan Tilley, he's a good friend, but he basically did the following. He took mice and gave them a diet that is 40% less calories than other mice. And those mice were able to maintain better eggs, better number of eggs, and better genetically competent eggs than their counterpart. And what we're talking about, a 40% decrease in calories over lifetime, is basically instead of taking, somewhere around 2,000 calories, taking 1,200 calories per day for women, and that is associated with a better weight loss type management story. So those mice lived longer, they produced better eggs, and they produced eggs of better genetics than their counterparts. And there is no question that that could be extrapolated to humans, in my opinion, because there is even, we think we know the mechanisms behind that positive result. There's another similar study done on, believe it or not, worms in Seattle that also showed exactly the same thing. So can you imagine that egg number changes positively for women that maintain their weight or on a little bit restricted weight perpetually and in terms of weight management, and they have better genetics of the eggs that are there.
How about men? So,
well, men, I don't think that Jonathan the researcher did it for sperm mice in mice, so I don't know the answer to your question. But again, as I mentioned, the testosterone estrogen ratio, which in men, which is directly related to weight, is positively affected with weight restriction in men. The leaner the men are, the more muscle they have, the less fat they do have, the better are their semen parameters, and there's no question about that.
And their performance, too, you know, I mean, they're sexually active more.
Yeah. Remember, we mentioned that because the sexual performance directly is related to testosterone levels and biologically active testosterone levels and free testosterone in the blood, and that is clearly related to weight. That is why leaner men have better libido, better sexual performance than men who are overweight and or obese.
Sure.
No question.
Does it make a difference whether it is carbohydrates or whether it is, you know, fat from animals, such as from meat, from chicken, from anything else, when it comes to the diet?
It's interesting. Carbohydrates are the worst. Processed sugars are the worst. Fast food related to increased carbohydrate entities are worse. Better, as we mentioned earlier, better fiber, better carbohydrates with longer glycemic index, and so on. All of those are better foods. And the less processed the food, less processed the carbohydrates, the better the outcome. For instance, it is better to have, let's say, brown sugar than processed white sugar. It's better to have whole cereals than ground the processed cereals, and so on.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting how we fall into certain habits. You know, for example, I remember last Ramadan, I got used to eating some, apayif and things like that. And then the second week, I felt like I have to have that, you know, because I felt like I was addicted to it, you know, and then I start cutting down because it did make me feel good right away. During the day, I had that withdrawn in my body, and it didn't feel good at all. So when I cut it out of my dinner, I felt much better, although it tastes really good.
Well, you know what? Unfortunately, a lot of things in life, including food. I mean, why do we eat more? Why is there more obesity? Because food makes you have a fix. I mean, in essence, you eat, you feel great for a period of time, and then you feel let down, and then you tend to eat more to overcome the immediate hypoglycemia that happens because of foods with short glycemic index, and therefore to that end, I mean, you tend to eat more, so it becomes like a vicious cycle, and eventually, as you rightfully suggested, you have to break the cycle somehow if you want to perpetually feel better, not just have a quick fixes every few minutes.
Absolutely, and it's not easy. Not easy breaking a cycle.
No one said any. You know what? I think that no one has suggested that dieting is easy. No one has suggested that fasting is easy. I mean, fasting is not easy at all. But it has all those benefits associated with it, and therefore people should do more of it. At the same time, realizing the long term beneficial effects from calorie restriction.
And junk food tastes good. Let's face it, you know?
There's no question, Khalil. But here's the
You know what makes it really tough in our community is anywhere you go in the evening after you break the fast, and they push all these great stuff out here, and you look at it, it's like, oh my God, they look so good, but I don't want to eat it. You know, it's not easy. So
I have to mention something because, there are certain diets our Mediterranean diet is considered a very healthy diet as far as fertility. There are other diets that are excellent for fertility, especially the keto diet and so on. And those diets have very, very little carbohydrate in them. And therefore, basically avoid all those high-rich, carbohydrate-rich sweets that we incorporate in our non-fasting state during the holy months of Ramadan and so on. So I would advise cutting down on sweets as much as humanly possible to maintain the beneficial effects of
fasting. Absolutely, absolutely. You know, every year I publish, my magazine is an online magazine, and, it's a business magazine in the community, yamichigan.com. But every year I publish an edition for Ramadan, and, Dr. Ajour has contributed to it and talked exactly about that. Also, Dr. Ali Subah talked about when it comes to teeth, how important it is to lessen, the intake of sugar and processed sugar, because the next day you're going to have to deal with it. You're going to have to deal with bad breath and all of these other factors. So, we try to educate our community as much as possible.
No, I mean, I commend you for having, let's say, discussions like this morning, because I hope the message reaches a lot of people and they look at it positively and they use this month as a stepping stone to improve their life in general, to avoid smoking, to avoid eating too much food, to maintain a healthy weight, to maintain a healthy lifestyle in general. And so that's all good stuff, I think. The more we talk about it on the air and in our communities, the better it is that we have a better populace and better humans.
Absolutely, absolutely. I want to really thank you so much, Dr. Shama, for being with us this morning. It's been a great hour talking to you. And, this is a great wealth of information. Whether you observe Ramadan or not, happy Ramadan to you.
Let me tell you something personal so that my listeners, for full disclosure.
Sure.
I mean, I'm Christian, but my wife is Muslim, and she's fasting,
okay.
And she's the love of my life. And to that end, I mean, I wish her a happy Ramadan. And I actually, even though I am Christian, and I fast with her because it's the only right thing to do, even though I'm Christian. Because I think all those positive benefits of fasting is
absolutely
should
absolutely
not be understood.
I think that's true. I mean, that's true love too.
Yes, I guess so.
That's true love. That's true love, my doctor.
All right.
Again,
happy Ramadan to you and to
thank
all
you.
The
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you being with us, and happy Ramadan to you and your wife, your family, and the entire community. And thank you so much for being with us, and have everybody have a wonderful weekend. Thanks, Dr. Shama.
Thanks.